Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Justin, I both want you and don't want you to play Destruction All-Stars.
Scott.
I want to know what you think, but it's also so not worth your time.
Well, this is what you keep saying to me, man. Like, you came in looking forward to Destruction All-Stars, and now, suddenly, it's apparently the worst thing since unsliced bread. What happened? Why is it so bad? Because I know even last year, when the PlayStation 5 was first announced, you were like, Destruction All-Stars, this is going to be such a good game.
I was looking forward to this game so much. I mean, I love Destruction Derby, and I love Rocket. Is it?
No, I said it was delayed, you know, back at the time. Like, it was supposed to be a launch game.
Audio was delayed, and I was like, oh my God, but it's fine. I was looking forward to this. I mean, yeah, I love, like I said, Destruction Derby. I love Rocket League. Give me arcade racing. Give me all the things that this game seemed to be thrown together into a lovely little pot. And it kind of ticks that box, but there's so much wrong with it. Like, one, the UI is abysmal, for one thing. Like, the actual interfacing with this game on a UI level is terrible. Just like weird tiny text boxes or giant badges that's been thrown at you. There's the microtransaction side of it. There's the fact that you have to pay for additional story chapters. They give you one character at the beginning, and then you have to pay real world money to get additional story chapters. There's the actual feeling of playing it, which is terrible, because if you come off something like Wreckfest, which is really physics based and really satisfying, Destruction All Stars is like trying to be more arcadey, a bit more like Dirt 5, but like more just because of the lag, nothing really syncs up properly. You're always just sort of like, you still hit people and you get points for it, but it's just a bit naff. And there's the fact there's only three arenas and everything looks the same. And it's just so not satisfying. And it kind of just comes together to be this really weird, threadbare thing that honestly, I feel, I tweeted this out. I have a theory that they were going to sell this for £70. Like, this was going to be a premier AAA PlayStation 5 exclusive. And I feel like they had that on the cards at one point, and then someone somewhere, pure theory territory, I think someone somewhere stripped this down and said, actually, we can sell all the disparate parts of this across the whole year and have the microtransaction storefront in there. And that'll be our little moneymaker. That'll be Sony just trying their hand at something more sort of third party, sort of like a platform for content. And it just feels horrible. No part of it is enjoyable. The base game, I'm going to let you talk at some point, the base game of just hitting people. You just drive around in a circular arena, hit someone, and you get a point. Like, just what is that? There's no weapons. Like, you can deploy a power up, but it doesn't really change much. And some of them are crazy overpowered. Oh, Josh, mate.
It sounds like a big thing, Scott. Because it sucks for me, because like, I had no real major interest in this, but because there was like a little bit of hype around it, because it was going to be this free PlayStation Plus game, I remember like last week or whatever, when it came out, I was talking to my friends. I was like, guys, there's this game coming out called Destruction All-Stars. We could play it. It sounds fun. It's free.
Call it Duty microtransactions down, mate.
On. Put those red tracer rounds down. We're going to play Destruction All-Stars. And then the reviews came out, and then I heard what you said, and I've just had no interest in jumping in, because it does sound like this threadbare, bare-bones thing that just, although I think the theory that you've just posited there about them maybe viewing this as a live service and breaking it into chunks so that they can release further on down the line does sound appealing, it sounds like they even get like the kind of basic things wrong, though, with like the lack of music or the lack of like...
There's no music in the game. Like, there's on the menus, but there's nothing in the game itself. It feels so weird and empty and disparate. And it's like, is this literally unfinished? Like, did you take something out of this? And also, like, I love at the core, I like the idea idea of a bunch of cars smacking into each other, and you can get out the car whenever you want, do a little bit of platforming, Prince of Persia style, to be honest, running on walls and stuff, and then jump in a different car and keep going. And the devs said that you should think of the cars as weapons in an FPS, that you jump in one, you use it for a bit, and you go to another one. But all the cars feel the same. Like the van one feels a little bit heavier, but they're still, it's not like one has a massive amount of health or one has like a specific RAM that the other one can't do or whatever. But also that treadmill thing, that idea of like super basic gameplay, arcadey gameplay, should then come across to a really cool reward system or a really cool XP system or something. Yeah. And the skins that are on offer are god awful. Like it's four color palette swaps, which if you're like, Hannah's my favorite character, and she just has a couple of like trims, like a couple of colored trims on her shoulders that go different colors. That's it. And then if you save up enough points, you can get a whole other skin, but it still looks mostly the same. And that's kind of the case for all of them. And it's just like, what is this? Like, just because it's free, I guess that's okay.
Yeah, I guess. There's nothing that frustrates me more, man, than having like a system like that that just doesn't have appealing rewards. Like, I've been enjoying Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War like as much as the next person, but you look at the skins in that game or the camouflages for the weapons, and I'm like, are these this bad on purpose because you want me to buy the battle pass or buy the skins that are in the score? Because maybe the camos, I'm just like, how did we get, like, there's only a handful anyway, and they're not very good. And I wonder whether this is just gonna be like a trend going forward where we have the content there technically, you have skins in there technically, but they're nowhere near as good as the paid for ones that are to come, the microtransactions ones to come.
Do you remember when Gears of War 3 came out and that was completely dragged through the muck for doing this exact same thing? Like at launch, there was a whole bunch of optional stupid, like a giant tinfoil skin or a giant gold one. Something that would just look ridiculously terrible. And it was like, and everyone leapt on that, rightly so, and said, what the hell? You can't charge for this. Like, what are you doing? And then that's just become the business model. A bunch of games have just crappy, like a stupid pattern. Like, who's buying this stuff?
I don't know, man. This is especially stings, of course, because like it is a big PlayStation exclusive, and it feels like it's been so long since Sony just completely swung and missed. Like, you can maybe point to Days Gone as being underwhelming, but I'd argue that still had enough to it to get an audience, you know, and it still sold really well. Whereas this seems like, I imagine what we're going to title this video as, it seems like a knack level misfire, you know what I mean?
I messaged you and Ben Roy, and I was like, I think this might be the worst PlayStation exclusive since, and I try to think of anything that fills the end of that sentence, because to me, at least Knack was a serviceable platformer. Like, it was a letdown, right? And Knack himself as a character model was nowhere near as beloved or lovable as something like Crash Bandicoot. But at least it was a serviceable 3D platformer, quite challenging as well. The order, the combat mechanics were serviceable enough. It was enjoyable. Yes, it was 90% cutscenes, but when you were playing it, it played well enough. So it's like, okay, you've got to go like further back. So I was like, I don't even know, like Lair? Like Lair, like the original version of Lair, where you sort of like gyroscope controls. Like, what the hell is that? So yeah, I don't know. Like, I've been playing hours and hours of it. I'm like level 20 or something. Cause I was like, oh, I just want to make sure I'm right in this. Cause like something's really wrong with it. And I feel like a lot of the response to it, it's been like, well, you know, it's free. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. Like, you know, it is free. It's not free because you've got PlayStation Plus, but something is drastically wrong with what was originally going to be sold last year versus what this is. Because if this was sold for £70, like the torches and pitchforks would be more than out.
I was going to say, do you think if this game came out at launch, and even if it was like free back then, do you think it would have maybe more apologists because it is then a launch game? Do you think the fact that it's come out a few months afterwards?
If this was the pack-in instead of Astro.
Like, yes. I mean, alongside Astro. If it was alongside Astro, it was just another game in the launch lineup that you didn't have to play because you had Miles Morales. But I think, I don't know. I don't know whether it would be judged less harshly, but it feels like now in this period we're in, where we're all waiting for the big next gen game to come, we're all waiting for something like even the Returnal, which is now being delayed until April. We're waiting for something to justify our console. And then All-Stars kind of comes along. It's kind of like this half-baked thing that people aren't really getting. It doesn't feel finished. It feels a bit money grubby. Has that maybe soured the waters a bit more because we're all kind of in this zone where we're just wanting this next-gen game to come
along? Well, I try and look at every game like in its own vacuum. Like for me, I mean, yeah, I was excited for it. There's that legacy of just the title of just sort of, I remember Destruction Derby. I remember that being a big thing. And like for me, Wreckfest is totally the Destruction Derby spiritual sequel. But it's just that if you separate all that stuff out, even if it was a pack-in game and you got it, they changed the value proposition and it's part of the console price, it's a bad game. Like, it doesn't feel good to interact with. Like I said, the menus, the UI, the text is really tiny in some places, but then it's just, everything's all over the place. You can't read, you can't even read what your special powers are as a character in the online menu in the lobby. You've got to go offline into the arcade, bring the character back up, hit a button, and then you can see what the powers are that you might have actually used in the multiplayer mode. Just stuff like that. It's like, you know, they're shooting for Overwatch in regards to how like diverse the character pool is. And the characters are the best thing in it. The character animation is the one standout thing where it's like, oh my God, that's actually phenomenal. Like the way you've animated them is brilliant. But they're shooting for Overwatch. And it's like, to that end, in Overwatch's case, you just press it's like one of the D-pad buttons and you can view your powers right there and then. Whereas in Destruction, like you can't view anything in game. You can't view what you can do. You just have to try and memorize it from the arcade mode or the offline stuff. The one free option they give you before, you know, unless you want to pay for the additional chapters. And it's just like I get you've tried to sort of hodgepodge like Overwatch and a little bit of Rocket League and a little bit of the legacy stuff with Destruction, Derby the name. And it's, like I said, it just feels so threadbare. And it's like the devs like are like a veteran team. So it's like they would know better. Just something seems so off with it. But I mean, in terms of the value proposition thing, like, yeah, I can't imagine a world where they sell this for full price. But are you gonna wait or do you see yourself checking it out? Because even now, I don't see anybody talking about it, and it is free and available. But people are like, yeah, whatever.
Well, that's it. I mean, there are so many good games out to play right now that I just don't know where I'd slip it in. Even like the PlayStation Plus games that are out right now, like I'd want to replay Control more than I would want to give this a try, if that makes sense. And it doesn't help, Scott. I mean, this is a bit of a tangent. It doesn't help that I have such limited space on my PS5's hard drive. I would have to sacrifice something good to give it a go.
Both the recent Call of Duties installed at the same time.
I have the skeleton of Black Ops Cold War downloaded because I had to delete the main campaign and the multiplayer. So I think I've just got zombies downloaded because it's just an absolute nightmare because I've been trying to play Nioh 2 alongside that. But I was intrigued by it, but at this point I'll wait probably for like potentially some more content, maybe some patches down the line that make it a little bit more appealing because there could be like a cool little party game fun.
If they added power-ups, like because they have, each character has one ability, but it's like it charges up. So you only really use it maybe twice, three times a match, if you're lucky. But for the most part, it's just you're driving towards someone, trying to aim at them. They drive to the side, you miss them. And it's like, okay, like that's it. That's the entirety. If you hit them square on, you get 3 points. If you graze them, you get two. And if you sort of like just glance them a little bit, you get one. But that's it. Like there are a few different modes, but there is one mode called Tornado that's really cool where you hit dudes, you get points, and you bank them by driving into a giant tornado, which that reminds me. It's cool. That's the only original mode in here, though. Everything else is just like, you know, whacking into dudes. But the Tornado thing reminds me of Titanfall 2's Bounty Hunt. And I think more games should have that. That like that risk reward of like trying to, you know, like get a bunch of points and you bank them somewhere. But it needs a power-up system because I was playing it going, this is worse than cell damage. And I don't know if you played cell damage. But,
well, the PlayStation 2 cell damage.
Yeah. I love cell damage so much. Like playing as Cinder, I thought he was great. And I like love cell damage, and I love like that whole kart racing ethos. Like a little bit of that. Like put some of that in Destruction All Stars. Make it so that each one of these cars, when you get in them, has a different weapon attached. That would sort of, you know, inject it with a little bit of Twisted Metal or something like that. It's just, it's so close and it's like swing and a miss, but you also gave up on the swing halfway. Like,
I wonder why they released it right now, because obviously they delayed it. I wonder why now was the moment where they were like, right, we need to get this out. Like, could they not have put it in development for like a little bit longer?
Well, that's my theory, though. I think they took a full game, they stripped it all the way down, and it's like, okay, it's February, so we've got a whole year of content we're going to put into this thing. The most baseline version of this skeleton that we can sell? And it's a menu and the characters and three arenas and that's it.
And it's fine because it's free, you know?
Yeah, and it's fine because it's free.
Free cost, there you go.
It's a hell of a thing. So yeah, I came away stonking mad from All Stars, but I've still got it installed. I like that because of the SSD, there's no loading. You can just hit the home button and go from a challenge on the home screen menu straight into a multiplayer game. That's a cool idea. We should pivot into something that you've been playing though, because you've been doing a little bit of the old Hitman 3.
Yes. Busting that out. Very much have. Just finished finished the final level last night. So I've seen the story through to completion. Replayed a few of the levels a few times, and I'm excited to go back through and replay them more. But I'm just having a great time with this. I love this daft serial killer simulator that it's just transformed into over the past few years.
You've been blasting, you've been shooting people left, right, and center.
Yeah, I've just been trying a bunch of different, you know, approaches to these different levels because they're just so open. They just, you know, react to what you're doing in such an interesting way that I love going into them over and over again. And I like turning off the mission prompts just to try to figure things out on my own. Because there's nothing more satisfying than when you, you know, think of a way to murder someone in your head in Hitman, I want to specify, and then the game lets you do it. Like the game just accounts for it. And you just feel like a genius, man. You feel like this galaxy-brained assassin. Uh-huh. And I'm a big fan of this game in particular. I played the second one. I haven't played the levels in the first game, really. Oh. And I played through the second one, played through this one, and is a sequel. This is the first one I bought full price, you know, at launch. Mm-hmm. And it's just lived up to it for me.
Okay. The thing for me was that, like, I loved the story in 2. And it's so weird. I mean, I remember all the conversations after 2 being like, oh my God, we care about the story in Hitman. That's the first time. But I thought that was such a cool idea. Like, the idea that you care about these random NPC, like, targets that you're taking out. The idea that they could have weight to them, that you care about this place you're infiltrating, all these different clockwork mechanisms that can come together for the kill. That you, like I said, you genuinely care about taking out this leader of Providence or whatever, the head of the Illuminati-style group kind of thing. I thought that was really, really cool. And then I think for me, like, and as much as I think Hitman 3 is phenomenal, the same way as the other two, it's maybe the most solid, like, trilogy of games. I'm trying to think of another trilogy that's that consistent the whole way through.
It's hard, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah, like, that might be the top tier, and that's mainly because they stuck to their guns so much. And it's like, it took them until the third game or the second game's DLC to even get cutscenes because they just spent the budget on perfecting everything else. But yeah, with the story stuff, I thought they kind of squandered it. And it's not to get into spoilers, but the cliffhanger that they end 2 on, for me, just gets completely swiped away in 3. And I know that is so not the appeal for, like, you or most people, because they're not getting invested in the story, which is maybe just fool on me for thinking Hitman could have this really cool story. But it's just, considering the weight of what they set up at the end of 2, I think they just kind of brush it aside in 3. And there's a certain dance scene that I love in 3. I think they bring that stuff back, that relationship back. So vague. But they then end on a really interesting pivot. I think we should talk about the last level. Not story-based, not to be spoilery, but I think that last level is such a different pace. I don't know if you ended up shooting your way through it, but I played it like Uncharted 2. The last level is way more linear. You're working your way up a train, and it plays out like Uncharted 2's train level. It kind of felt like them doing a Bond level or doing a more straightforward level.
Well, that's the kind of general vibe I got from the whole game, to be honest. It feels even more so than the other games, like a dry run for Bond. From the score that, like, plays over you, you know, spying your way around, like, these locations, it felt like Bond. And I was like, this is cool. And I'm not even, like, a big of a Bond fan. It just hit those notes, and it hit them so confidently in a way that, mechanically and from a system perspective, like, the other games were as close to perfection as you can get this type of game to be. But this had an extra level of sheen and an extra level of production value that those two didn't have, like you mentioned, not just in the cutscenes, but in the musical score, in the way, in animations, in terms of the art direction and stuff like that. And the last level in particular took me by surprise because I wasn't expecting it. Like, when I finished up the 5th, I was like, oh, we're probably done here. This is probably fine. Mm-hmm. And then we get on that train. And I kind of treated it as a more or less like I was the Terminator. You know what I mean? I was going through this train and I was just wiping all these guys out. Because I think it's the one level where you can just kill anyone and not be penalized for it. Like, even if you're doing headshots, you get, like, your rank is going up. So I took advantage of that and murdered everyone. But even then, I still like that they don't force you to play like a shooter. It's not suddenly like he's a contrived set piece to cap off the game. Like, you can still, from what I gather anyway, you can still get through that mission, like, in a classical hit.
Oh, I didn't get seen. Like, it's strange because as you go character to character, I was like, oh man, are they actually doing this? They're doing, like, a way more, it's kind of rigid. The thing that I loved is that it calls back to Blood Money, like the big twist at the end of Blood Money where he comes back to life. Again, to stay away from spoilers, but it's a similar vein. Like, it's just, it's like when you have all the beginning of the way the 47 looks at the beginning of that last level. And for me, and what's going on thematically, narratively, just reminded me so much of the setup at the end of Blood Money. And so, like, when I kind of realized they were doing that, I was like, that's absolutely badass. And then when you start going carriage to carriage, I hadn't been seen at that point, and I was like, I wonder if I can do the whole thing this way. And I did start playing it Uncharted style, where I was just hopping out the windows, walking up a bit, hopping back in again, and keeping going up. So I did the whole thing without being seen. But it's like, it's also strange because when you go back on the main menu, it's like, oh, you can do an escalation contract or you can do additional targets on this level. But for me, because it is so linear, like, it is by definition a straightforward, like, sprint kind of thing, or like movement, no part of me wanted to replay it, which is like, I was just like, this is a great story finale and I love the last level, but it's just, it felt so limiting because it is carriage by carriage.
I do agree that it doesn't have like the same open-endedness as the other levels, obviously. Mm. But I was actually impressed at how many options there were. Like even when I was going through it and I was just blowing people away with these silent shotguns, I was like looking at some of the prompts that I was getting. And I was thinking, oh, I could have done it like this. I could have tried this out and with more patience. I could have ghosted through in an interesting way. I could have poisoned this person who might be part of an escalation contract or something like that. I don't know how many times I'll replay that in comparison to the other levels, but I just thought it was far more fleshed out than I expected it to be. Because like I said, I thought it was just going to be this sort of point A to point B straight shot to the finale. And it was much more elaborate than that. And like I said, had this higher level of production value that I didn't really expect. And yeah, and I didn't think of that final Blood Money mission, but now you mention it, it is quite similar in terms of
like a spiritual sort of little connection.
Structure, yeah. Yeah, totally.
I was going to say, did you, like, for the story stuff, because you came in on two, did you, like, where would... If I say, like, how much do you care about the story in Hitman? Was that on your mind going through it? Or is it more like it is this fun, elaborate sandbox of, like, potential mechanics?
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah, this is why I've been looking forward to this conversation. Because no, totally. We haven't like talked about this much, but I feel like we both approached this entire series like quite differently in what we've got out of it. Because for me, the story in 2 was just something honestly, I could barely even recite to you the plot of Hitman 2. And consequently, I thought I was going to just mostly ignore Hitman 3's story, but I was surprised that it actually engaged me in a way I didn't expect.
Sweet,
I was like,
Jesus, Josh Brown.
Very interesting and very cool. And I thought the cutscenes were very well done. And I thought the people you're taking out, like you said, there is that gravity to it. And, you know, there are references to the other hits you've done in the other Hitman game, not to get too specific, but I thought that was cool as well. Mm. It made your time in the other levels feel more important. And like you said, added more weight to the world. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't going into this game like you know, hoping for them to take the story to the next level. That was just kind of like an additive thing that I wasn't expecting to enjoy, but I ended up enjoying because I played this one differently to 2. I'm not sure whether it's better or worse, but this time around, I played the levels like in a row, like linearly. I played the campaign, so I was going from, you know, cutscene to level to cutscene to level to cutscene to level. Whereas when I played the second game, I jumped on 2 years after the fact, so it just threw me all of these menu screens.
You did later levels first, didn't you?
Yeah, and I was just jumping between the levels with kind of like no rhyme or reason, because I didn't even know there was a campaign button by that point. So I didn't experience the story like
the
more or less.
Campaign button, Mom.
Please just tell me. I'm sure I might have even messaged you when I got it saying like, Scott,
yeah,
where do I start?
That's what broke me, because you were like, you've played like one of the later levels. I can't even think which one you did first or something, but you did something. And I was like, well, surely you saw this. And you were like, no, what's that? And I was like, you've not done Sapienza or anything. No, I've not even done the first game. But it's that's the thing. I mean, they built that great set of levels. And for me, like, you know, when I talk about like championing that entire trilogy, the tech on display is insane. Like just the amount of animations, the amount of different possibilities that they had to account for. That's the stuff that for me, I look at that and I look at what someone like Bethesda are trying to do, like this whole clock. Like obviously it's a different scale, different scope. But when you look at what IO have pulled off, like that's the stuff where I'm just in awe of it. Like I feel like most game mechanics now, even though we don't, obviously not coders, we sort of look at it and go, I see how that's put together, or I see how that works. Whereas like the literal beat for beat gameplay of Hitman, all these different like world triggers, proximity triggers, different things to make sure that things are happening in front of you in different events. And there's like a timeline to everything in each level, but it's still like, you know, relies on you being in certain places at certain times. Mm-hmm. That stuff is magic to me. Like it genuinely just blows me away.
I fully agree, man. And I really appreciated this time around how reactive the world is to kind of like, not your mistakes, but just your actions in general. When I was playing through Hitman 2, every single time I replayed a level, I was trying to hit a specific target in a specific way. So I was doing a lot of save scumming. And if I was getting seen, I would be loading a previous save. I wanted to do it perfect. This time around, I was like, well, I'm going through the levels linearly. I'll replay them later. So I'll just go hog wild. If I have to improvise and take out this target a specific way, I'm just going to do it. If I'm going to get seen, I'm going to have to think on my feet. I just thought that resulted in so many memorable gaming moments for me that it almost made me click with the series in another way, because I found as much enjoyment in those mistakes as I had in the successes in previous titles. Like there's a mission where you have to investigate the Stately home and take out this target. And after I replayed that a few times, I was just thinking, right, I'm going to do this Terminator style. I'm just going to go in as if it's a third person shooter.
Why does your brain go there? You told me that on a message. I've just shot them all. I was like, what do you mean? Why are you doing that?
It's because for as much as I love Hitman, like the catharsis often comes after like 30 minutes of setup. And sometimes just before bedtime, Scott, I want to blow off some steam by murdering an entire home full of people. So I did this. But even then, it was much better than I expected, because the people do react to your actions. Like there are bodies all over the place. And the target I was going for, like her bodyguards, like were ushering her around the mansion while I was following her. So it was like this cat and mouse thing where she was one step ahead of me. And then she escaped into this panic room and her bodyguards like sort of staged this last ditched effort to try and ambush me. So I took those guys out. And then I went and finally caught up to her. I was like, that's so cool. The fact that I can play it like this if I want. And it's not just like so many other games where they say, well, you can play it this way, but then you do it. And it's like the game hasn't really accounted for it. It's not really good if you play it like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas Hitman, it's like, yeah, you can just do that. And you can have memorable stories that stem from it. Yes, the shooting might not be very satisfying, but the story of your journey through it, it can be at times, yeah.
It's worth saying that like Hitman can be a better GTA game sometimes than GTA like ever was, in regards to the smaller scale, like just sheer anarchy. Like I love the fact as well that they let you just go hog wild with a fire axe and the whole environment will react to you. And it's like, but then 47 takes himself so seriously. So it's like, you can't just run into a particular room, take out 20 dudes with a fire axe. And then he just sort of like walks out all suave as the music's like, dun, dun. It's like, yeah, I totally meant to do that. I'm the best hitman ever. And I like all that stuff. It's just, I just laughed at your brain going there, because my mind wouldn't go there at all, treating it like a third person shooter or something. But I did go crazy with the fire axe in the Paris level in the first game. But I was like, this is me pushing to see how far I can get with like the AI and all that kind of stuff. But I love the idea of just treating it as an actual, seeing it all the way through and finishing the mission.
Well, that's it, because it's just like the juxtaposition of it intentionally is just so funny. It is a funny game to play. You know what I mean? I like just getting into those situations where I'm disguised as this guy and I can't get close to this person and do a story, assassination where I push his head on a pen or something. But also I can do that while also improvising by myself and have a fire axe in a case. So when he turns around, I get the fire axe in Jack Nicholson from The Shining, just drive it into his back. You know what I mean? Like, and then escape in his own car.
Like, I was gonna say, I love music like, players. Awesome. Yeah, you like put their clothes on, you walk out the door, and all the bodyguards are like, "Okay, sir, let's carry on." So, like, yeah, that's me. I'm just a completely different person, but I have this hat on, so you think it's me. I don't know. They steer so much into that, but in such a weird, specific, subtle way. Like, you can get away with so much, and the game will. Some of the dialogue will just reference it, or like I said, you can totally just dress up as a contact or a contract or whatever, and then have the entire game just treat you as royalty and sort of like escort you out the mission or whatever. It's like that end bit from Leon, like where it says he dresses up as the policeman, made into like a slapstick thing. let me tell you about a game, because we're running out of a bit of time, but I need to tell you about a very special game. A very terrible, very, very, very horrible, possibly early front runner for the worst game of the year. I always get its name wrong because it's got a really stupid name. It's called Werewolf the Apocalypse Earthblood. As soon as I saw it, it was the kind of thing where I was like, this is so my SHIT, and I need to dive into that. And so I got it, and it's really bad, but you can play as a werewolf. So there is that.
Well, I saw the only gameplay I've seen, actually, is what you posted on Twitter. It was about a minute long, and you're a werewolf, and you're just ripping up a bunch of dudes. And you know what? I thought I could have a bit of that. Yeah. I could go for a bit of that. You know what? Instead of playing Hitman like a shooter, when I get to those, 20 minutes before bed moments, I can just stop playing Hitman, put the werewolf game on, and smash some dudes over the head with my big, massive claws. Is it like, you said it was bad there. Is it like, is this a game that you wouldn't recommend or would recommend because it is a brand of throwback badness?
Did you like Blood Rain 2?
A little bit I did, yeah.
Because that the nearest analog is Blood Rain 2 or is X2 Wolverine's Revenge. More so Blood Rain. I know. You go back to X2 now, it's not. You need to let that live in your mind. But Blood Rain 2 had a lot of fun with physics, and I miss games that have fun with physics. Just let me pick up a dude and let me throw him through like a plate glass window or a bunch of trophy cabinets, whatever it is. I don't care. I even like the Minority Report game because it let you do that. And so like in this, there was a Minority Report game. It was a beautiful time. You should see the guy they got to play John Anderson, because they couldn't get Tom Cruise. And so they had to make the opposite of Tom Cruise. So it's a big, tall, square-jawed man who's blonde to just sort of make sure no one ever goes, that's Tom Cruise. Werewolf thingy, Earthblood, Youngblood, whatever. That thing, when you become the werewolf, because it's a stealth game. I don't know if they got this across in any of the marketing or whatever. It's a full-on old-school stealth game, instant fail stealth, although you do get power-ups to get around it. But you have a werewolf button. And why wouldn't you push the button, become a werewolf, and just hack the living hell out of everybody? Especially because if a spotlight sees you, it's just going to kick you back to the menu and ask you to restart again. So you just end up, you get more rage if you take people out and then transform, but you don't actually need it anyway, because it just gives you special abilities, but a couple of hits from the werewolf claws kills them anyway. So you just kind of hit the button, werewolf out, and then you can eat dudes' heads to get rage anyway. And so you just hack the living hell out of everything. And it's 2003 AF, like it's proper, like middle 2000s, just big, dumb gore. There's like metal riffs in the background and you're just lobbing people through glass. And it's great, but also terrible.
Well, yeah, the issue is, man, like, I want to be the werewolf all the time. Like, I don't want that to be the special mode that
you can be a dog. You can be a dog all the time. Just a little regular little dog.
That's not a bad trade-off, to be fair. If I'm a dog and then a werewolf, that sounds all right.
It's better. Okay. The thing that really, like, hampers it is all of the dialogue, all of the writing, and the fact that I hit, like, I don't know if it changes, later on in the game, but the setup, I was going to go into the whole, there's a lore to it, because turns out Werewolf the Apocalypse is a D&D style group of fiction alongside Vampire the Masquerade and Mage the something. And so the game just hits the ground running with all these different like terms and all this different stuff. But the actual gameplay locations, you're like a pack of werewolves that are camping outside a giant facility because you're all like eco-terrorists and you're all having a go at this big facility that's like destroying the world and, you know, that sort of thing. But I'm like 3 hours in and every level is just, you leave the facility, you go back to the camp. You can see the facility from where you are. And each level is just sort of your leader guy going like, well, we need to retrieve these files or we need to go and like put this key card in this thing. So you just, you go back down, you go back into the facility and you go back through all the levels. It all looks the same. And you do one other type of mission goal. And it's just like, why did you think this was okay? Like you could have had this whole varied thing.
How much did you pay for this game?
Oh, I think it's £45 on the English store, I believe. I don't know. I do not under any circumstances pay for this video game. Not in any world.
Well, right. I love you, man. But this is the thing that you do to me all the time. You're like Josh, I'm gonna build this game up to you. It might be the worst thing ever, but I'm gonna build it up by how much fun I'm having. Yeah. And then you're like, don't buy it. You did the same with Godfall. You're like, Josh, this has got a great introduction. It does. The most next gen thing I've ever played. And then you were like, don't get it though. And I'm like, no, you can't do this to me, man. You can't give with one hand and hit me in the face.
No one's stopping even throwing you money at the screen. If you really want to play some Godfall, it's right there for you. But I'm just letting you know that game peaks in the first 5 minutes and then it drops off a cliff. And if you're 45 bones for that opening bit, then cool. Yeah, werewolves combat is cool, but everything else is god awful, and the character animation is hilarious. Literally everything is just bad. But other than picking dudes up as a werewolf and throwing them through stuff, which I want to do in every game, your final thing is a little bit of Nioh 2.
Yes, finally properly gotten around to this game after telling you for about 4 years, or pretty much since I met you, that I was going to finally one day sit down and play this. And honestly, I wish I did it sooner, because Nioh 2, from the few hours I've played so far...
The day you play Ori and the Blind Forest will be the day I dance outside.
The thing that I've always been, you know, put off a little bit by Nioh is the fact that it's so long. Like, these games are, you know, in the... It could be 80 plus hours, and I'm not sure whether I want to commit to something like that. But jumping in, I can see myself playing this just over and over again. It was like the classic case of a few games have struggled to grip me recently, but I immediately booted this up. It was up way past my bedtime last night just trying to beat this boss. And it's because it takes everything I love about Dark Souls and Bloodborne, you know, that kind of repetition in the structure, that kind of tough but fair, you know, classic description, but it adds so many options to the combat, and the combat itself is so fast paced and so visceral and so satisfying that I'm just like, I want to try all these weapons, I want to try all these different play styles, I want to get stuck into it and see what I can do. Like, the sense of satisfaction beating some of those bosses last night, or beating some of those enemies and getting through places, I was just like, this is sick. This feels great to play, and I want work to be over so I can play more of it right now.
This is you talking about Nioh 1. You started with Nioh 1, or did you start with 2?
I started with Nioh 2. I'm afraid.
That's fine. I don't care.
2. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, you gave me a bit of grief earlier for jumping straight to Hitman 2 approve. But
that was a mix of you going in all guns blazing with Hitman 2 and not playing the levels from Hitman 1. But, I mean, that's the thing. That's where we flip yet again, though, because I haven't touched Nioh 2, whereas I played the living hell out of Nioh 1. But yeah, I mean, the stuff that they bring in, like the sheer speed of combat is awesome, but I love that all the customization stuff, which I'm assuming is still in 2. I love the loot system that you can fight ghosts of other players to get their loot. And then I love if they still have it in 2, where you can customize your counter stance animation. You can customize your, like, there's different, like, moves in combat that you can swap out. I like the idea of, sort of making a build around those things. Just little touch-ups that you kind of... I mean, I know that if you actually look into Nioh's development, I'm sure it was in development for 10 years. It started as something completely different, and now it came out as this sort of Soulsian thing. But I love games that take the Souls formula and do new stuff with them. And I feel like Nioh is one of the most confident, like, iterative Souls games, like, of them all, really.
100%. Like, it was initially so overwhelming, and that's what put me off as well at first, because there's like so much to sink your teeth into system wise, you know, even like little changes, like you said, changing your stance depending on what weapon you have. Like, it's a lot deeper in terms of mechanics than, you know, something like Dark Souls ever was. And there's so much loot to get your head around. There's so many things with your, you know, transformation form and stuff like that. But I just found it was delivered, at least in Nioh 2, so much neater than I expected it to. Like, it was easy to wrap my head around all of the stuff that I was scared of originally. I thought, this is very much more intuitive than I expected it to be, and it doesn't detract from the in-game, you know, sense of I don't know, satisfaction that you get from taking out these people.
How many times have you died, and how you're way better with frustration than I am. I think I would have thrown it out the window by now, but you tend to be like Homer Simpson when he's just sort of fiddle-dee-dee, let's do that again. Whereas I just sort of punch my legs and go slightly mad.
Well, I have heard that it does have a reputation for getting a bit cheap later on, but from the few hours I've played so far, like I feel in control, and maybe that's just because I've played a lot of games like this before. Mm. What gets me killed the most isn't necessarily, you know, the enemies themselves. It's accidentally pressing R1 because I think I'm playing Demon yep. Souls. And yesterday I was fighting a boss and my controller died and I almost threw out the window because it was quite hard and I had him. But
it didn't auto pause.
No, there's no pause. It's like the Dark Souls thing where you can't right. pause it when it happens, which sucks when your controller goes off. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I got flattened. But so far, it's been a nice balance. Like, you definitely have to approach it quite cautiously, but you can be aggressive and you can just like start slicing people up and pulling off these combos in a way that doesn't punish you for trying too much. You know, it's not a game where you have to hide behind a shield. Like, you can be active, and I really appreciate that. And so far, I've died like, I don't know, 5 or 6 times, and I've played a couple of missions. You know, I feel like I'm doing all right so far. I think, I hope. I'll probably get wrecked tonight, but so far it's okay.
That's good. I like the idea of getting back to Neo 2. It's just that, like, I don't know if I can take it, because I saw when I went back to Demon's Souls, I was like, oh god, I remember this. I remember like a game sort of treating me like dirt and sort of like just keeping me on the ground that I'm trying to get up. Like, yeah, I just sort of. I don't know, like, because you really enjoy Demon's Souls. Obviously, the bosses in Demons are quite easy, like, even though they flattened me. But, like, would you say that Neo 2 is, should you just dive into it, even if you're coming off Demons and you want something that's a bit more cerebral?
I think so. I think if you enjoy any of the Souls games, I think you'll enjoy this, because it's so similar in terms of structure, like I said, but the combat for me is a touch more satisfying. I'm not saying it's a better game by any means. I still think I prefer the overall package of a Bloodborne or something like that. But here, like, the combat is the thing that will get you in, because it is so responsive. It is so satisfying. And on the remastered edition that I'm playing on the PlayStation 5, I want to say, like, we got a copy for this game. Just want to highlight it. Not that that's changing Sony, my opinion on it.
Sony sent it over.
But on the remastered edition, like, you get like a 120 frames per second mode, which isn't great, but I'm playing it on the quality mode. And like, these games, whether it's Demon's Souls or whether it's Neo, like, they just work so much better in 60 frames.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't imagine going back to some of the other Dark Souls now and you know, playing them in 30 frames. I feel like something would be missing, whereas here, like, it's so much more fluid, it's so much more responsive. And it's I feel like if you like those kind of things, like, you should give it a go, even if it is incredibly intimidating in a way that made me not want to give it a go for so long, you know. Even when it was free, like, it was like Neo 1 was free on PlayStation Plus, and I still didn't try it then, you know.
I played Neo 1. I was shouting from the rooftops for Neo 1 for so long. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. At some point I might go back to Neo 2. I just don't know if my mind can take it in the current state. But maybe when the sun comes out again, I might give it a shot. That might be my summer. We'll see how the rest of the year goes. For now, though, we haven't got a name for this. We sort of just started it. It depends whatever's happening in the week, what we decided to focus on. We chose to focus on these games because it's the stuff that we're playing. And Destruction All-Stars is obviously the new PlayStation Plus game for February. But yeah, for now, I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
I will catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.